Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 296. So many zombies, so little ammo. Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Go gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to yet another fantastically new and fresh episode of our weekly podcast. How you doing?
Hi.
You having a good week so far? I mean, it's just started. But it started the right way, because you're kicking it off with an episode of this podcast.
I hate Mondays.
I don't hate Mondays, because any day I wake up is a good day. But I don't particularly love Mondays.
But like, there should be a day after Sunday called Fun Day. And that's like a day that you have fun, no work. It should be an 8-day week. And Fun Day should, like, be Fun Day.
But then wouldn't you think of Fun Day as just being the end of your week? Because you can't start on a high and then go into Monday. Like, if you have Fun Day and then you got to go to work, won't that make Monday suck even more? Because the day before was Fun Day.
Then Fun Day should be where Wednesday is. Fun Day should be in the middle of the week.
Okay, so if Fun Day is then in the middle of the week, it's kind of like the Spanish siesta day.
Yeah.
Like a whole day.
And then you're completely recharged for the second half of your week.
I like that. I think we should replace Wednesday with Fun Day.
Start tweeting about that now, guys.
Yeah.
Wednesday equals Fun Day.
Yeah. Hashtag Wednesday.
Get your sombreros out.
Seriously. Like, because then you could break up your Fun Day, and, like, I could have half of my Fun Day be about gaming, and then the other half.
Whatever you want your Fun Day to be about, that is what your Fun Day is about.
And relaxation, and, like, friends, and all
that. Wait, you have friends?
So, Crystal Dynamics, who I absolutely love. You know, we talked a little bit about the Tomb Raider reboot last week.
We actually talked about it like a year ago.
We did.
When I got to see it over at Square Enix behind closed doors.
And we were kind of drooly faced then.
Like, at first I was like, I don't know.
Right.
But now that I've seen how further they've gone with it, I'm like, okay, I might really like this reboot.
Well, I again, you know, and kind of what I touched upon last week, I like that Lara isn't hyper-sexualized. She's still very sexualized because she is a strong female. She's a good-looking woman. She's attractive. But, you know, she is vulnerable and young and not necessarily naive, but, you know, what you would expect out of a 17-year-old or 18-year-old
Lara. I like what they're doing with reboots of characters that we've already seen. Because, I mean, a lot of people didn't like the idea of Daniel Craig playing pre-Bond.
Yes.
But they now showed us
him becoming Bond. Yeah, I am.
Like, they've opened up a whole new thing with that.
I am so okay now with Daniel Craig.
Yeah, but at first everyone was kind of like, meh.
Yeah, I was a little concerned.
So, you know, when they dropped the whole Bond that they were going to redo this with Lara, I was kind of like, I don't know. Because
right.
I'm used to grown-up, millionaire, treasure hunter, gets into shit.
Yep.
And knows how to survive with guns. But now we're actually going to see where that strong survival instinct in her came from.
Yeah.
Because now it's not, oh, I go and, you know, I treasure hunt and I happen to, you know, have to learn how to survive. No, this was, I have to survive to live.
Right.
Like, this is the purest form of survival known to man.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm really excited about that. But there's a little bit of controversy that popped up this week.
Oh, no, really?
Like, a little bit. It's like a skosh of controversy.
Like, if you put it in my tea, would I notice the hint of it?
You would notice the hint of controversy in your
tea.
Yes,
okay.
You would notice. It definitely wouldn't be Tahitian vanilla that stood out in your tea.
Oh, my.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah. So, what had happened was, the fine team over at Kotaku had interviewed one of the Crystal Dynamics team members. His name is...
Wasn't he one of, like, the lead guys?
I don't know if he was, like, the lead developer, if he was one of the producers of the games, but it was one of the Crystal Dynamics guys. You know, somebody who knows about the game.
Right.
Is what I'm saying. And they were talking about, you know, the ins and outs of the game, and Crystal Dynamics had released a new trailer right on the heels of the gameplay walkthrough that we had seen during the media briefings at E3, and the really the central demo that you were treated to if you had an appointment with their team to go through the game on the show floor. And the trailer is a little more graphic. Not that the game's not graphic. I mean, poor Lara gets beat the hell up in this game. And I think that's a lot to kind of how they want to explain the a little bit of coldness and aloofness that you see in older Lara is because
she's like, oh, I have to avoid these dogs. Oh, I just jumped down a cave waterfall.
You know, the
she's been through worse.
Exactly.
Now we're going to see it.
This is the hardening steps that actually made her.
This is her cocoon part of her transformation.
Well, I mean, it's her development.
It's like,
right?
I'm a caterpillar, and now we're going to see the cocoon that turns her into the butterfly that we now
Correct.
Know as the Tomb Raider.
Correct. You know, and so in this particular trailer, Lara is kidnapped. You see some desperation points for her character. She basically ends up bound. I can't remember if it's rope or if it's handcuffs. I think it's handcuffs behind her back. And
it's rope because
is it rope?
By the end of the trailer,
she
manages to free her arms from,
gotcha.
From it.
Yeah. And she's bound with her hands behind her back. And one of her attackers, who is male, has her pinned up against... I want to say it's like a tree next to a
tree. Rock.
Yeah. And is basically making a sexual advance towards her, which is a unwanted one. And you see Lara fight back, trying to get this guy off of her. And what the trailer sets up and what this entire encounter sets up is the first time that Lara Croft has to make the life or death decision and ends up having to take a life in order to protect herself. You know, which is one of the things that we take for granted in the Tomb Raider games. Cause
I think in most games where you're slaughtering thousands in your wake, I think we just turn that light switch off.
Right, but I, you know, from the first Tomb Raider cover that I ever remember seeing where, you know, she's dual-wielding guns. I mean, we've always just taken for granted that Lara was okay killing people. This actually sets up the first time that she actually has to make that decision. And there's a little bit of a hesitation and a struggle because, you know, you are
taking
human life.
And obviously, at this point, she doesn't have the skill to skillfully do it. So now we're going to see that develop.
Exactly.
So just like with the Daniel Craig Bond.
Yeah. No, where the controversy comes up, because just in talking about that, like, there's no big deal.
Like, I'm sure you're going, guys, what's the big deal?
Yeah, so here's where the big deal is. In the interview that was done with the Crystal Dynamics dude and Kotaku, they brought up the question of, you know, how did the team get comfortable with and decide to, you know, incorporate this attempted rape into the storyline, and how did that fit in the universe? Because we've not had anything like that before in a Tomb Raider game. You know, even with a character who is so sexualized, like, there have been hints at, you know, relationships and sexual tension between Lara and characters, but nothing, you know, directly on. And when you watch the trailer, it's obvious to anybody who wants it to see it that it is an attempted rape. It is an advance made by a person,
Batman,
on to Lara that is not wanted, not asked for, in a way that she is very vulnerable and not easily available to reject and defend herself. Okay? Where the issue comes in is the guy that they were talking to at Kotaku started talking about, you know, the attempted rape, you know, in this video, and that it sets up this piece of the story that Lara has to make a first life or death decision because she's defending herself.
She's defending her virginal vagina.
She is defending herself against this unwanted advance.
It's purity against
not purity.
Right.
So Tapa runs, you know, with the story and shows off the trailer, and they talk about the, you know, the
moment of truth.
The moment. Well, and it's not even like it was the big focus. It was like one of the questions about setting up the story. Somebody else at Crystal Dynamics saw the story and I don't want to say went off, but immediately went, oh no, this is completely incorrect. There's no attempted rape. There's no rape of any kind in the game. We would never
do anything. Was that a girl?
No, it was a guy. We would never do anything like this in the game. You know, there are all kinds of things that are going on, and there's life and there's death, but that's not what we're showing off in the trailer, and the quote is incorrect, and Kotaku's off base on this account.
Oh, Kotaku probably didn't like that too much.
Kotaku did not like
that at wrong.
All. And so, of course, they came back and said, look, here's the transcript of our interview that we did where this guy said it. That we talked
like,
about.
Here it is. Here's the time signature.
Here it is. So, either there's a miscommunication about what this plot point is within the team, or somebody done lied to somebody, but you guys be the judge. And I thought that was a classy way to address it with Kotaku.
Right, not saying we're right, they're wrong, just saying listen to it, look at everything, what is your...
Just look at it, and literally just saying, look, we didn't make this up, we didn't fabricate it, here's our transcript. This is what was said to us by a member of the Crystal Dynamics team.
Who I'm sure if they orchestrated the interview right, we probably have his or her name at the front of the interview.
Yeah, exactly. So this is what was said. This is what we heard. This is why we went down this road and talked about this element in the article. This is the response that Crystal Dynamics has put out. You can be the judge. And here's the trailer. Visually, be the judge. And I thought, okay, that's absolutely the way that you go about it. Because you don't want your credibility damaged.
Right.
Because there's no way to come back from that when you do it. And so I thought it was a classy way of them saying, here's all the facts. Here's the trailer that they put out. Here's the transcript of our interview. Here's their response to our article. There are all the pieces. You sift through it all and you decide who's right, who's wrong, if it matters, if it doesn't matter. But here are all the pieces because we didn't make this shit up.
Here's the puzzle.
Exactly.
Put it together however you want to put it together.
And so I decided I'm going to run through all this stuff. So I started first with their article and I read through it. And it pretty much was in line with a lot of the things that we had talked about the game and what we were impressed with.
Right.
And I hadn't actually seen the second trailer. So I went and I watched the second trailer. And then I went, okay. And then I looked at the response from Crystal Dynamics, and I went, all right, Crystal D, I love you, but between the transcript, and even if you don't have the transcript, just looking at the trailer, here's what I saw, so what you said in the response doesn't jive with what I just saw. Like, the visual that you created.
But now here's where I'll interject.
Yes, because I had you watch the trailer as well.
I had seen the trailer at E3 when I was standing over at the Square Enix booth, because every half hour they would put one of the really big trailers on their big screen.
Yep.
I happened to be there wanting to touch a little bit more of Kingdom Hearts 3D, and it happened to be on while I was waiting for my turn.
Right.
And I did not get that sense. Like, I had seen it. It didn't trigger in my head as, oh no, Lara might get raped.
Right.
Like, it really didn't. And, I mean, we had also seen it at the Xbox presser. And, I mean, everyone who was sitting there at home or even on the floor like we were all saw it. No one said anything.
Well, not because it's not an overt, oh my god.
It's not like, oh my god, he ripped her shirt and we saw her boobies.
Exactly. Basically, what happens is, with her arms behind her back
and her pinned against a rock in a hard place.
Yep. He makes an advance, the kidnapping character, to try and start kissing on
her neck,
Lara's
and
neck.
And he did slowly move motion towards, like, ooh, your thigh.
Exactly,
nice
with his hand.
So it looked
you're
like,
young. Exactly, like he was going to do, you know, a whole grab of either the thigh and or butt area while leaning in to kiss her neck.
Smells she pushes sweet, sweet Tomb Raider scent.
She pushes him off with her body one time because he takes a step back and he gets pissed. And he
whams her in the face.
And whams her in the face, knocks her back against the tree, and moves in again. And on the second attempt, Lara bites his ear, which makes
Mike Tyson him.
Yeah, which makes him completely come back, and that's when she gets knocked to the ground, and he goes off to do something else, and she starts to free herself. So it's not an overt, oh my god, he's about to put his dick in it. But it definitely, like, as far as just what the definition of
rape is,
is that it's an unwanted advance that she was not able to overtly defend against because she was bound.
Yes.
Okay. And she did fight back. No, and pushed him off, and then violence was used. So by the clinicalist, barest definition, it was an attempted rape. Not that it was an overt, like, she got strung up by the hands and, like, her clothes were being ripped off and tortured.
And you saw her cute white panties with a little pink bow on them.
Exactly. It wasn't like that, but it definitely was an unwanted sexual advance. Right? And not even an attempt at it. It was an unwanted sexual advance. And so I think that, you know, because the word rape was seen, and rape is a very, very sensitive
subject. I'll grape you in the mouth.
Not just in video games, but really in entertainment.
It's a hot button word to anybody. Like, to I'm going to rape the sandwich, but what did the sandwich do to you?
Exactly. But you know, it is a very strong word, and when you are dealing with a franchise that has a lead female character, I'm sure the moment that the word rape appeared in the article, Crystal Dynamics immediately had heart palpitations.
Yep.
Which is, I'm sure, the reason why they responded the way that they responded. But I think that's one of the areas that you get into, you know, having some real hesitation about making a game with a strong female character. Because it is very easy to try to paint a heroine as a damsel in distress. I think that's an easy jump for
a non-aware damsel in distress.
But she is
not even aware that she is in danger.
But I think that that's an easy mechanic for a lot of writers to do, right? I've got a strong female lead. I'm going to put her in a position where she's vulnerable, where she's a damsel in distress, so that you, as the player, become emotionally involved to want to get her out of it. I think that that's an easy mechanic. I think it becomes, and there's a level of, okay, well, how do I do this in a way that isn't offensive?
Right.
When
you make it as opaque as possible.
But you know, you don't have a same issue when you have, you know, a male lead character, right? That you don't have to make a male character vulnerable necessarily in a both an emotional and physical way to get the user to want to get them out of the situation. So for instance, Nathan Drake. You don't have to be emotionally invested in Nathan Drake to want to get him out of the situation. Because sometimes you're just like, okay, well, I got to get out of this room. It's going to blow up. Like, there's not an emotional reason to get Drake out of the room.
Right. It's not like his daughter's on the other side of this burning bridge and he's got to get to his daughter or whatever.
Correct. You know, but I feel like a lot of times, the teams that are creating games that have a strong, you know, or a female lead feel like they have to create some emotional reason. I mean, think about it.
No. And you're absolutely right. But then, I mean, we're talking about a subject that's far more deep than where we're even going, because they're banking on making a female character believable. And this thing about some writers out there is that's the big problem, is that some writers, most writers, female and male, have the hardest time writing a female character.
Yeah, and so here we have this character that we, as the gaming community, know and love for being strong and being a badass.
Right.
You know, being on the same level as, I will call it, the boys club when it comes to adventures, right?
Yep.
Okay.
You know, Nathan Drake saw Laura and was like, I want to be like that when I grow up.
You know, exactly. But you look at, I mean, how many times when we first saw Uncharted did we go, oh, look, it's Tomb Raider, the dude version.
Yep.
You know, but you now look at this setup, and I think that the reason why it was such a hot button and it became this back and forth thing is because you're dealing with a female character that for a long time has been hypersexualized. And everyone is now sensitive to that sexuality because we're dealing with a naive, younger, not badass yet established character. And I feel like
we're dealing with a realistic person.
Correct.
And now now they have to establish the stereotype that she became.
And I think that it's the realistic approach is the reason why it became this back and forth thing. You know, if the same scene had happened with Lara Croft from Underworld, there wouldn't have been an article.
You mean Kate Beckinsale from Underworld?
No, Tomb Raider Underworld.
Wait, they had an Underworld? Oh, wait, was that the one with the whole god thing and her mom possibly even from Avalon or what? What the fuck was that mess? What was that? I just wiped that from my mind. So apparently, obviously, we could tell what I felt.
So yes, not Kate Beckinsale from Underworld, but...
Sorry, I heard Underworld and thought... and I thought Kate Beckinsale. I'm like, what? Wrong Underworld, wrong female protagonist.
Wrong female protagonist, wrong franchise.
Bing
bong. Try again. If it was that Lara, there wouldn't have even been an article. There wouldn't have been, because we all would have known that wasn't going to happen. Lara wasn't going to let that guy get anywhere close to her neck.
Yep.
And I think that's because we have this younger, more vulnerable, more realistic.
Well, now she's going to establish that, you know, not having to be in close contact if she doesn't have to be.
Well, my thing is, and ultimately where I'm getting to is, I love the fact that because there was a back and forth, and because there was such a knee-jerk reaction on both sides to what the situation was, that I feel like already the community and people have a emotional connection to this more realistic Lara than the Lara that we know and love. And I am really excited about that.
Because guess what? We just got a clear dose of perspective.
Serious. Like, that... Ultimately,
here,
that's what happened
with your cheeseburger.
I'm like, Crystal Dynamics is defending that, oh my god, we would never do anything like that to our...
Though it does subconsciously look like they did that.
Yeah, but they were literally like, we would never do anything like that to this Lara because she, you know, she's almost an ingenue, if you will. You know, we would never paint Lara or anything in the universe this way. It's totally unfounded. I love that. Because when you look at the visual and you break it down for what it is, it was absolutely an unwanted sexual advance. It wasn't allowed to go to a dark, negative, evil place. It was stopped, but it still was there.
We got to see, if we're gonna play this game, we got to see the action that could back up an intent.
Correct.
That's what we're playing with, because she was bound. He had the ability. He went in to act on this thought that I'm sure in this universe that character would have had.
Correct. But I think that, you know, it also comes at, you know, the sensitivity around rape, because it's very easy to, when you're dealing with a female character, elicit the emotion, the emotional reaction by putting the female in a sexually charged negative situation. I think that that's an easy play to make. It's difficult.
It's hard to do that with a guy.
Correct.
Well, that's also because, you know, not that I want to preach to a lot of people here, but a lot of male rapes are never reported. So it's not in the mainstream consciousness that it does happen. And it does.
Yep.
So I don't want people to say, oh, guys, don't get... Yes, they do.
Yes, it does happen. It's not reported as much. And I think that...
Not so much, I don't think they would get the same kind of reaction.
Absolutely not.
It'd be far... And I'm not saying that female rape should be less shocking than a dude rape, but because we don't see it, I don't think anyone would be able to portray it accurately enough to garner that same response.
Correct.
Yeah. From either of them. I think we'd be shocked with either of them.
Correct. And you know, for an American audience, you know...
Especially American
And audience. For a company, I can understand why Crystal Dynamics would immediately want to come out and say that's absolutely not the case. Because, you know, especially in North America, anytime that label gets thrown to anything, the rating of that content immediately has to go into, on the movie level, a rated R for restricted, and on the game level, a 17 and above, or an AO title.
Oh god, I don't think we've seen an AO title in forever.
We haven't seen an AO title in quite a while, and I'm sure that Crystal Dynamics does not want this Tomb Raider game to be the first.
Oh god. Because
there's already a lot of violence in the game, so it's automatically going to be a 17 plus game. And so I think that part of their reaction is to ensure that it didn't get another look and have to go through the ESRB again for a possible AO.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, so many instances of violence and sexual content, and it throws you there. And that dramatically cuts down how many people can get your game, because Walmart won't carry it.
Nope.
GameStop doesn't care. GameStop, to my knowledge, does not carry AO titles in store.
No, you'd have to order it.
You would have to order it. And, you know, that cuts down on the amount of people that will actually pick up your game. So you start getting a little deeper and you realize, holy hell, like, this could be a real powder keg if it wasn't a
Man, Square Enix might get in some trouble.
Not that they would get into trouble, but they would get into financial trouble, because if the game gets an AO rating, it dramatically cuts back
their sales.
Correct. You know, parents, I think when you have a child that's 16 or 17 or, you know, even 18, coming, you know, right out
depends
of high school.
Depends on where.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, are probably a little more apt to get a 17 and up, you know, mature title for a child that they know is, you know, of age to understand the difference between animated violence and play a puzzle game.
Hopefully can establish between reality
not.
And
but I don't know any reality. Parent who would buy an AO title for their 18-year-old child.
If I was old enough to have an 18-year-old, well, actually, I am technically old.
I'm talking about mom. So let's take this back. Esh mom, you're a senior in high school. Do you think she would have purchased an AO title for you?
Actually, our mother,
sober.
No. I don't think we should use us as an example. Because
I know, because we're kind of special.
My mom bought me, you know, our mom bought me Angel Sanctuary when I was 18, after I got my wisdom teeth taken out.
Yes, but was she aware of the content of it before she purchased it, or after you watched it?
Well, that's the thing. Mom was not aware.
Yes. This is what I'm
because
saying.
There was, ooh, a pretty angel on the cover.
Correct. Now, what I'm saying is, now I'm talking about actually picking up a game that right on the front, because, you know, the ESRB ratings are on both the front and the back of
the title. Well, I think this is at the time that Eshmon didn't realize that animes could be, like,
yes,
dirty, nasty.
Right, but I'm talking about, okay, when you pick up an AO title, it very clearly and bluntly,
yep, like Rape
Play
from Japan.
Correct. Says adults only.
Yep.
You can't miss it.
I don't
know.
It's
on the front and on the back.
I feel like if Angel Sanctuary had said that on there, Mom would be like, well, Amanda's 18. Or Panda's
right.
18.
But, and you're talking about a cartoon. I'm talking about an interactive video game. I mean, think about it.
We had to
lobby to get Mortal Kombat.
Back in the day, yeah.
Okay? We had to lobby because there was the thing on the TV about it.
And again, Eshmon did give me a lot of stink when I first wanted to get Heavy Rain, when I told her what the premise of the game was. And then when she actually saw me play it, she then was like, wow, this is really...
Right, but you were well
over
18. And that stink was still happening. So, you know, I understand where it's coming from. And frankly, you know, I love that it sparked conversation. I love that it sparked people to take, you know, a longer look.
Look at this and really look at it. Don't glance at it. Look at it for consumption.
Because,
attentive looking.
You know, attentive viewing.
Attentive viewing.
Yeah, but seriously, because I want more characters like this. I haven't played the game. I haven't gotten hands-on time with the game yet. But everything I've seen from Tomb Raider is really inspiring to me. It really is. And it's been a while since I've been able to say that about a video game.
It makes me want to get lost in the jungle and try to survive.
Well, it doesn't make me want to do that, because I'm just a city girl.
I wouldn't live, but...
But what it does do is it really makes me, one, want to play this game. And it really inspires me because, you know, in 2012, we now have a video game with a strong female lead.
Yep.
Who isn't hyper-sexualized
yet,
or super-sexualized.
Granted, we know where she'll go.
We know where she goes, but she has on full-length pants, for fuck's sake. Like, one of the things that I loved about
the costumes. I'm sure at the very end of the game, like, right when she's about to get
sick. I'm sure she has to tear them off, you know, for some reason.
No, I actually think they should play it up funny. Like, she should go through all this and still manage to have full pants on.
This would have been so much easier if I had had shorts.
Or if, like, they, like, one leg had ripped enough, so, like, she had to rip one off and be like, well, that would have been useful.
You know,
and then, and cut, and end the game that way, like, ah, and that's where the shorts came from.
You know, and that kind of thing. But it really is inspiring to me to have this character that people are already emotionally connecting to, you know, and wanting to protect. You know, because that's what I get out of Crystal Dynamics' response, is that they're trying to protect this character. And when you look at all the things that they've said about the game and the way that they're setting up the character, as a player, you'll want to protect this character. Which, in all the previous playthroughs of a Tomb Raider game that I've done, I've never felt like I had to protect Lara.
Because Lara protects herself.
Correct! So that's what that's what inspires me, is that I'm going to be able to now play this character and develop her to the point where I won't have to protect her anymore. I can just run through and be her, and I'm excited about that. And I'm excited that it seems like the community as a whole also feels the same way. So, you know, in this way, I think it's a good controversy that has popped up.
Controversy. It makes our games better.
Sometimes it does. I was really I found it very interesting, the two sides and the everyone decide for yourself and how many people actually watched and ran through and had discussions about it, and you know, and not just the trolls who are just like, well, she was asking for it because she's Lara, you know,
she's not the Lara that you're saying deserves that.
But it was really kind of interesting to me. So that was the first thing I wanted to lead off with, and you know, I know I get wordy about it, but I really found it to be an interesting situation, and with a character that, you know, is female, just throws it into another level, because, you know, one of the things that is really prevalent to me, or at least was that there are more stronger females showing up in gaming now. And I'm loving that. I really am. So
I will agree with that. I think we are starting to see a stronger emergence of strong female characters.
And not just the bubbly airhead.
No. Though I'm glad that you brought up a bubbly airhead.
Bubbly airhead segue.
What a great way to do it.
Huh? Pound it.
Yeah. So, I know some of you guys might have already read my piece about this particular character that I'm going to talk about.
Yes.
But I feel like I should vocally talk a little bit more.
I feel like you should as well.
About it.
I feel like you need to break it down. And about her. And her.
So, we all know I love zombies.
Yep. You are the zombie queen.
And, I mean, talk about getting so many zombie titles, like, for this upcoming holiday season.
I know, there's so many zombies.
It's so many zombies and not enough ammo.
It's because everybody's doing bath salts.
That's terrifying.
I'm saying.
But anyway, I want to talk a little bit about Lollipop Chainsaw out of Warner Brothers Interactive Studios and Suda 51 and that whole deal. Got the game on release.
Yay, so I got it on Lollipop Tuesday. Chainsaw!
No collector's edition, because I had touched it a little bit at PAX East. I got to touch it a little bit more
at E3. Wait, what was in the collector's edition?
I don't know. But maybe pom-poms or panties. Like, the game is so hyped up that it could have been... Actually, no, I think there was a foam chainsaw, like Juliet's chainsaw, I think. And, you know, like, Gatsby, things like that. But, I mean, obviously I wasn't interested that much in it to even think about getting it.
But I like tchotchkes.
I know you do. But I normally don't. You really have to entice me with something really shiny. Really shiny to get me to go, I will pay more money for that. But regardless. So I did...
the Gears one? You didn't get the Gears one.
I wanted that one. I just didn't have the money for that one. Ooh. There's a difference between having the money and not wanting to burn it, and physically not having the money and secretly wishing that you did. But
gotcha.
And that's my wheelhouse. That's where
right.
I am.
Right.
That's
understood.
Where I'm at.
Understood. I felt alone.
Lollipop Chainsaw. Has met a lot of really mixed reviews. Now, I wouldn't say that there are people out there who are saying, oh my god, this is utter crap, don't invest in it. I think the mixed review comes from meh to very enjoyable.
Alright, so what's the background of the game? Tell us about Lollipop. Yeah. So you pretty much have your main character, Juliet Starling. She just turns 18 at the start of the game. Okay. So she's happy about her birthday. And she's just talking about her day like it's any other day. Well, to her it is. But to the rest of us, you know, you're seeing a lot of things going on. You're seeing zombies just walking around in daylight.
Zombie?
Yeah, just zombies hanging out. She's talking about, you know, her dad being a total dilf and how all of her friends want to fuck him. And, you know, but no one could ever get in that because he really loves their mom. And she wears her vagina proudly, as do her sisters. Like, it's really campy.
Okay.
You know, but in a positive way, woman empowerment. I'm down for that.
Right.
And you see her boyfriend, Nick, who she's madly in love with, an 18-year-old. You know what that means.
Yeah.
And you see him get ambushed by a shitload of zombies. You know, and then the game starts. So you're pretty much just, it's a hack and slash.
Mm-hmm.
Juliet is obviously, and when you play her, she's obviously not taken aback by the fact that there are zombies roaming around San Ramiro.
Okay.
Like, it's not a big deal to her, so you're kind of like, she's not freaking out. Like, you know, at least in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, she was like, what the fuck is that?
Right.
And then grew into these abilities. But Juliet's just like, fucking zombies on my birthday? Really? And you're like, ah, so you are not... You're not new to the idea of zombies and the undead and evil threatening good.
Right.
So you're like waiting for her, waiting for the reveal because now she's acting like this is nothing new.
Yeah.
But Nick doesn't know about her.
Okay.
And about this. So she's a zombie hunter. Her whole family is. Apparently beside her mom. I'm not sure about that, but the game sets it up that daddy is and the three daughters are and the mom is aware of what they do but isn't a part of it.
Okay.
Apparently. Air quotes. Not sure. I'm not going to say that it is or isn't. Anyway, Nick gets, you know, away from the zombies just as Juliet's coming to slaughter them all. One of them manages to bite him because he jumps in front of Juliet, assuming that she's a damsel in distress, and oh no.
Right.
You know, gets bit and he's about to turn. Juliet decides that, you know, they were just starting to get serious and she really loves him. So she performs a ritual on his decapitated head, which she decapitates with her chainsaw. Mind you, he's still cognizant when she, you know, brings it down and severs his head. So he is alive, but not whole. And he's pretty much destined to be that way, because as far as she knows, that's the extent of the spell, is to preserve his life in his head.
Mm-hmm.
So she pretty much attaches him to her hip, like on a, so he's like an awesome keychain.
Okay.
And, you know, all these really bad zombie bosses are summoned to San Ramiro and the world by this really emo kid who went to her school and he was like, none of you guys were nice to me, so it was nerd outcast guy seeking revenge on the status quo life that has dealt him, you know, a fist up his ass.
Okay.
And he summons five zombies. Each of these five zombie bosses seems to imbue or have a characteristic of a particular time frame, music, and attitude. So you first meet Zed. He's the first zombie boss that you fight, and he is completely punk rock. Mohawk, really skinny jeans, skinny leather pants, which I assume that if he had been living would have crushed his, you know, spleen and his pelvis so that he'd be dead anyway.
Okay.
That's how tight they are. He's the one who screams words at you. So, in the playthrough that we got to see at PAX East, you got to see that can do that.
Yep.
And you meet him, you meet one who's a psychedelic hippie.
Uh-huh.
You meet one who imbues, like, funk.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your Norse metal.
Mm-hmm.
And you get your, just classic rock kind of zombie.
So hair band kind of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you fight each of them. They're all different bosses, and they all have different, you know, obviously attacks to counteract what, you know, Juliet can do. Juliet seems really limited in terms of her gameplay, which I'm going to talk about right now, because I don't want to go into the whole story, because it is fun, and if you like zombies and you like campiness, then you're going to enjoy the story, so I really don't want to ruin that for everybody, but obviously, those aren't the only evils that you got to face in the game.
Okay.
But her attacks, you know, are like pom-pom dashes, where she's doing a lot of acrobatics with her pom-poms to daze or make zombies groggy. And that's when she takes out the chainsaw to decapitate them.
Okay.
You can use the chainsaw to, you know, remove limbs.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, the head's really where you want to go.
Right.
There's no BSing it. Because
even if you want to take out a zombie.
Yeah. Because, you can cut off his legs, but that means it's just going to crawl at you. And they do that. And then, you know, she has light attacks with her chainsaw, and then she has heavy attacks.
while decapitating zombies, you can build up a gauge that will allow you to go into sparkling hunter mode, which is pretty much if you can group a whole lot of zombies together and you can sweep them all in one fell shot, you'll decapitate all of them.
Ooh,
and the higher you do that, you get a higher ranking for that, and you get more coins and medals that allow you to shop and get more combos,
okay,
or get things that will increase your, you know, your vitality, your recovery, and your...
So your skill tree up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Those are the ways that you build that up.
Okay.
Issues. And there are several.
Mm.
They like to map a lot of her abilities to the same button, or almost the same combination of buttons. So, like, a button masher could take this game off the shelf, play it, and feel like they know what they're doing. But they don't.
Okay. So, for instance, you know, doing a cartwheel and an uppercut is the same, almost the same button press.
To do an armadillo roll.
Okay.
Yeah. It's literally maybe one more button. And sadly, most of the time when you're trying to learn maneuvers, especially if, like, you're a fighter, you learn how to do maneuvers, mm-hmm. it's really kind of hard because literally one maneuver is two X's and a Y, and one's three X's and a Y. But you have to be listening for the verbal cue so that you know when you need to hit the button again for the right pattern.
Okay.
So you could do the pattern the way that you think the pattern should be done, and she won't do the attack. So it's not very reliable a lot of the time.
Okay.
Especially when you're in a room full of zombies, and, you know, some of them have dynamite, and you really don't want them near you because they'll blow up.
Right.
That's bad. You can't walk into that feeling confident that you're going to nail the ability that's going to get that zombie before it blows up and kills you.
Gotcha.
Like, you really kind of are uncertain about what abilities will trigger when,
uh-huh.
and how to really use them effectively, which is really kind of sad because they really could have fleshed that out the way that Platinum Games did for Bayonetta.
Yeah. I have to say that I really like the load screen, you know, in between levels, being able to practice moves.
Right, which they could have easily put into this game, which would have made it really awesome. I mean, some people, you know, tend to practice moves before they walk into an area of a game. I don't like the idea of that, because once I'm in the game, that's what I want to be. I want to be in the game.
Right.
And that's that. So, I mean,
I personally... You don't want to be training.
Exactly. If you're going to do that, put a training mode in the game.
Yeah. That makes sense.
It does. Also, there are a lot of prompts and stuff that will happen on your screen that... It's weird, because they'll show it to you at first, so you assume that it's a prompt that you could tap into, and, case in point, a phone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't exactly say when this game was around, like, in terms of the time frame of the game. They like to play around with a lot of old music, so, I mean, like, I don't know if it's still modern time,
mm-hmm.
but she just happens to favor that type of music in that time
right.
period or not. But the phone rings, and you're expecting her to pull out, like, a cell phone from her itty-bitty tiny skirt. But she has a phone inside of her chainsaw, which you'll see a little pink phone
mm-hmm.
emblem come on your screen, and it's moving like it's ringing, and you'll see her open up her chainsaw, pull it out, and talk, and it's usually your mom. And it's like, oh, it's Juliet's phone. I'm like, all right, so apparently mom's going to call me while I'm slaughtering zombies to check on me, and I have the option to, you know, answer the phone and talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. You can't make Juliet answer her phone. There are certain times in the story where she'll just do it. All other phone calls go to a voicemail, which you can only access when you're in Juliet's room, which doesn't make any... Yeah. It doesn't make sense. She's got a phone with her at all times. You'd think they'd be like, press select to answer the phone, or, you know, flash a button to...
So you get an on-screen prompt that you can't actually interact with.
Right. Unless it's meant to happen in the story, where she'll just, you know, open her phone and do it. Or, in your start screen, you go to Juliet's room, and you go to a tab with all the phone messages on it.
Huh.
It's a little messy. It's a little backwards to me.
Yeah.
And, like, I spent 40 minutes, like, how do I fucking answer this phone? Because it's not like it only comes up maybe once or twice in every chapter. Like, it happens a lot. And I'm like, I'm not ignoring you, Mom, I swear. Like, I just don't know how to answer my goddamn phone. Like, I don't. So that was kind of upsetting to me, that they would show that and make it look like it was going to be a viable prompt, and it's not.
Right, which leads me to think that at some point in time there was thinking behind actually requiring the user.
Yeah, and then they're like, there's too much going on, we're not going
to
do that.
And instead of rejiggering the whole game to pull it out, they just left them in there without a prompt for you to actually answer the phone.
Which might be the case. Though good, there's some good, though.
There is some good!
Yes, obviously. I think I gave it a solid 7
uh-huh.
out of 10, because
right.
it's a good game, it is funny, which is where I'm getting at. The writing is phenomenal, it is stellar. And they really, in terms of cast, for me, really nailed the cast.
Okay.
So our main character, Juliet, is voiced by Tara Strong.
Oh, yep, winning.
Boom, right there, winning.
Yep.
So we already know that she can do deranged,
mm-hmm.
because we've heard her, you know, try to tackle, what's her name, Sorkin? First name?
Eileen
Sorkin.
Yeah.
You know, granted, a lot of people were like, she tried, and she's almost
Harley
there.
Was good. Her Harley was good.
She was so close, but everyone was just so used to her.
Arlene Sorkin does a fantastic, demented Harley Quinn. Always has, though.
But, I mean, Tara Strong just happens to have this amazing range. We've heard her in Drawn Together.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Lost Odyssey. And I'm so surprised that I'm just learning that. But, yeah, she does a voice in Lost Odyssey, that giant JRPG that I love so much.
Mm-hmm.
She also does Twilight Sparkle for, mm-hmm. you know, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. Which is funny, because if you listen to Juliet long enough, you hear Twilight Sparkle.
Really?
Yes. I was sitting there like, that's totally something that I feel Twilight Sparkle would say.
Wow.
You know? And I'm like, oh my god. And I'm like, and she does it so well. She really does. I think she incorporated all of her characters to really kind of fine-tune what Juliet was going to act like and be like under all the circumstances. Her boyfriend, Nick, is voiced by Michael Rosenbaum.
Okay.
So Lex from Smallville.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was also one of the foppish guys for Loser,
mm-hmm.
with Jason Biggs.
Yep.
So we know that he is really good at dry humor.
Yep.
Blatant sarcasm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and great one-liners when you wouldn't expect a one-liner to happen.
Right.
So he's very sporadic. So their dynamic, as you can tell, you know, high schoolers, 18-year-old, holy crap, I don't have a penis anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Bodiless boyfriend with super hot, very scantily dressed. Like, the dynamic is just dynamite. Dad kind of feels like an Elvis, like a really sexy Elvis to me.
Okay.
Her two sisters, Cordelia and Rosalind, which, if you haven't noticed, all three of the sisters have names of females in Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
Cordelia is really, really strong. She's really focused on gun attacks.
Okay.
And each of them, in some fashion, will help Juliet through the story. You don't get to control them, which I think is kind of a weak point. Because you could have, one, shaken up the combat by allowing the player to play
the other
sections.
Almost like an escort mission.
Yeah. Which I think they could have really... And who says that they won't do that with downloadable content, but they don't do it in the release of the game? But everyone's dialogue sounds believable for the universe that they're in.
That's cool.
Which is...
Because when you do camp, there's always the possibility that something doesn't mesh. And usually it's that...
Either you have too much and you become B-movie campy.
Yeah.
Or you do it well enough that it's just good, humorous fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't care about how much cheese you're dealing
goes
with.
Goes along with it, right.
Like, the Army of Darkness.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes.
That is, perfected.
It is
no more, no less. That's all I want.
Yep.
And this sits in that
wheelhouse. Or Super Troopers.
Yes. And honestly, I feel like this game sits in that wheelhouse that it's just enough where I'm not like, wow, this is really cheesy. It's not. They like to play with nostalgia a lot in the game. So
mm-hmm.
there's an area, and I'm not going to say when, where actually when you're trying to get to one of the zombie bosses, you actually are playing a video game scenario that kind of mocks the Commodore 64 console.
Okay.
Like the gameplay for that. And Nick even makes the comment. He's like, we're like Commodore 64 in this. And she's like, I have no idea what you're talking about, Nick. You know, but it's funny and it's entertaining. And the whole time you're laughing while your hands are completely clawing out on your Xbox 360 controller.
That's the important thing, because when you've got a game that you're picking up, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's got to be fun.
Yeah, and it totally is. And the game really kind of panders to the person who doesn't have enough time to really spend a good chunk of time. Like I said, I picked it up on release, and I completed my first gameplay on normal, because I don't play easy. Easy's for pussies.
The fuck?
It is. Easy, easy.
I'm going to kick you in your knee.
Easy is easy. And on normal, I completed my game in under 7 hours, which speaks to me in a sense that they could have put a lot more content in. Like, I mean, I'm not saying... that a game has to be 20 hours, because that's a lot of time to ask a gamer, mm-hmm. especially one that's working full time, possibly mm-hmm. has a kid or two or a dog, mm-hmm. you know, or a mother.
Mm-hmm. Or a bachelorette party to get to.
Yeah, exactly. You know, to dedicate to. I tend to think that a good game could last, you know, on
10 to 15.
Yeah. So this game is under that level for me, mm-hmm. which means there's a lot of potential for growth. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they didn't...
Now, do you think that it was under 10 hours for you on normal because you've been playing a lot of games lately?
Well, that's the thing. Someone actually brought this up when I was bringing this up at RP Grind, is that some people think that I was just really good at this type of game because, one, I play these types of games on yep. the regular.
Because I can tell you right now, the three people that I've talked to since we started this conversation completed the game in 13.
Okay.
And so my thing is, because frankly, before E3, we'd both gone on a gaming binge.
Yep.
To make sure that we were, you know, ready for what we were about to jump into.
Yep.
And Lollipop is definitely the type of game that you typically play.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you did it in 7 hours because
it literally
is right up your alley.
Which it could be. That could very well be the case. I'm not going to say no and I'm not going to say yes because mm-hmm. obviously, you know...
Because that is a factor in your
game. It is. It's a game in my wheelhouse that I could pick up and button mash my way through, which is essentially what I did because mm-hmm. I did not, you know, step out of at any moment in time and practice any type of combo because mm-hmm. I really wanted to get to the story, which we all know that I'm a story chaser, mm-hmm. so shouldn't be that surprised. And yeah... So, I mean, that could very well be the case, but, I mean, a lot of people now, since I started playing, I saw that a lot of people were actually beating it even under my 7. Like, I think people were starting to realize that the game could be beaten in a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. So people were kind of challenging themselves and competing.
What a short run could be?
What a true short run could be like.
Yeah.
So, I could say yeah. And I am, this is the type of game that I would play, so I'm going to say yeah. That might have played a factor in that. But also at the same time, I feel like, you know, it's very repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
And that repetitiveness could make this seem very easy for someone as soon mm-hmm. as they recognize the pattern, right. which then just opens up the golden
path
to completion.
But I think that there are a lot of games like that, too. Like, for instance, Dynasty Warriors, right?
Which, I can't play Dynasty
which
Warriors.
Which anybody will tell you, Dynasty Warriors takes forever to play, depending upon how you play the game. I can make a run, like a whole story arc run in a Dynasty Warriors game in under 10 hours, if I really want to. And that's focusing on not building any weapons, that's literally just tactically going after the generals that I need to wipe them out, not taking out their whole armies just to clear a board. You can make
You're going
a run.
After the mid-bosses to get to the boss.
Exactly. You can make the run. It's not going to be, you know, crazy successful. You're not going to unlock everything. You're not going to get all the story. But you can make the run for, you know, a warlord in under 10 hours.
Okay,
but you're not going to explore and you're not going to find all the weapons.
Right.
You're not going to, you know, discover all the story points. You're not going to be introduced to
and
all
the
generals.
I mean, now that you bring that up, I didn't go collectible searching because you can collect
all. You typically
all
of, do.
I know. On my first playthrough, I usually do. But no, this game was so enjoyable that I was just like,
you were just fun ride.
Yeah. Which might be the case. Now, if I had sat there and put on my true, you know, exposure goggles and my completionist goggles, I probably would have completed this in a solid 10.
Yeah.
But because I didn't and I got so immersed in the fun that I didn't care.
And, you know, we've had this conversation before. There's nothing wrong with having a fun game you can get
No, absolutely not. Which is why here's where I'm going to rest. This is the last time I'll even bring this up until downloadable content, if becomes available, comes. Game is fun. Game is enjoyable. Do I think the game is worth $60? No, I don't. I would recommend for people who haven't bought the game yet to wait till it reduces in price to buy it. Do I think it should sit in your collection? Yes, but not at the launch price.
Mm.
Nope. Now, I mean, if later on down the road, all of a sudden, like they did with Mass Effect for the for the PS3, where they, you know, they released all this content and then they just grouped it in. If you can get like a golden collector edition one that they'll do all the downloadable content, that would be the ideal time for me to tell you to purchase the game. So, I mean, if you want to play it now, but you don't want to pay for it, I'm sure you've got a friend or two who bought it on release day, borrow it.
Okay.
Get your jollies from that, but if you really want to own it, wait. Wait till it becomes worth the $60 that you'll pay for it.
Makes sense.
But that's about it. worst case scenario, you can always just go to your friend's house and watch them play it. It's the exact same experience, except your hand won't cramp.
Yeah, and the non-cramping hand thing is
important. So you can eat Cheetos.
Cheetos!
And listen to the banter between Juliet and Nick, which is truly, it's the treasure. It's the Easter egg of the entire game.
I mean, come on, a game where, you know, one of the phrases that comes
Phrase is, what the dick? What the dick? And literally, Nick is like, really? She's like, oh, that's my new catchphrase. Do you like it? Like, they are completely aware that this is batshit crazy.
Batshit crazy fun romp. And yep. There's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely not.
We had the same conversation when we went through Bayonetta. Mm-hmm. You can run through it really fast. You can. There's depth if you want to spend the time and find it, and there's absolutely none if you just want to run through it.
I don't know if there's depth. Lollipop Chainsaw.
Well.
I don't... It's as deep as a puddle on a hot summer day. It is, and that's fine because sometimes you don't want to get wet on a summer day, so you don't need it. Yeah. You don't need it.
But there is depth in Bayonetta.
Yes.
If you want to spend the time to find it, that it is there.
Yeah.
You know,
it's right next to the pleasure pony.
It's right next to the pleasure pony. Actually, it's like if you look to the left.
Yeah.
And right. Just
it's
like
right
that,
there in a little box.
A little box.
Says depth.
Depth. Yeah. It's about an inch and a half.
But still, like I said, enjoyable. I would just hold off on your hard-earned bunny until it becomes worthwhile.
That's fair. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, after listening to you talk about it, I mean, and we had this conversation a little earlier in the week, I thought that Lollipop, just for the length and the things that we saw of it at PAX East this year, that it made more sense to me to be a live title.
Yeah.
You know, something that you would download for, you know, 800 points or something.
I think 800 points is kind of a slap. Because, remember, we're talking about a really, you know...
1,200?
I'd say 12 to 16.
Mm. No, that's fair.
Yeah. I would say that.
But it made more sense to me to be a live title than to be a full-on, like, press disc title,
exactly.
You know,
I would agree.
Just, and frankly, you know, looking at live, there have been some really deep, really fantastic, you know, titles that have come out of late. And even more so that are coming, you know, as we saw at E3.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into a little bit as they get closer to release. But it didn't really make a lot of sense to me to be a press disc, which is why it's one of the few games that I didn't pre-order. And I'm glad that you actually picked it up because I was curious as to how it would play, and I'll probably just end up borrowing yours.
Yeah.
When you finish your playthrough.
Well, literally, when I was done, I was like, here.
Yep. But then you're like, but fun. I need it back.
Well, no, because then I was watching people, I was watching a group live play through the first, and I mean, like, it's really interesting to watch somebody else play it, because then you see them do moves that you're like, I didn't know she could do that move, and, like, they're just fucking around, like, they haven't rehearsed it, they just picked it up. You just saw them open it on air,
mm-hmm.
So you know that they have had no prior experience with the game. So I'm like, oh, she can do that? And she can do that. It's like, now I want to go back and actually learn the moves, mm-hmm. and do things
that makes sense
with far more finesse.
All right, so I'm going to end on this note just because I really want to talk about it because I'm late in talking about it.
Okay.
But I did pick up Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Future Soldier, and I started playing it finally. And I got to tell you, when I picked up this game and started playing it at last year's E3, I was impressed with it.
Oh, you know, I was definitely excited about the Kinect abilities.
Okay, and I was excited about the gunsmith piece because...
Well, that's the Kinect abilities part.
Well, that was one of them. Yeah.
One of them, yeah.
What I was excited about was the ability to really tweak the gun to how I play as opposed to just, here's your M16, here's your, you know... MIG, here's your... But I could actually, you know, put a silencer on an AK-47.
That doesn't sound realistic.
It's not realistic, and that's okay. I'm alright with it. I'm okay with making, you know, non-NATO-sanctioned weapons to kill the bad guys. I'm okay with that.
Of course.
But jumped into the game, and, you know, it looks just as good as we saw at E3 last year, so, you know, nothing was sacrificed there. The combined kills are actually easier to execute in the final game than they were during the E3 trial that I had, which makes it a lot more enjoyable to actually do. the camo piece is kind of funny because you get this camouflage technology that basically, when you're in a crouch walk, supposedly makes you invisible-ish.
Were you still getting shot?
Yes. I'm like, if you can't see me, how
would you know?
Exactly.
How would you know where I was?
Exactly. Like, I'm getting spotted. I'm like, you can't see me. I'm invisible. And then one of my
members... You're like the guy from the Mystery Men. It's like, I'm invisible, but only when people turn around.
Exactly. That's exactly what I felt like. Because I'm sitting there, and I'm walking out into this area, and I'm like, I'm invisible. You can't see me.
Bang.
And then I hear one of my guys go, serious, they got eyes on you. I'm like, how do they have eyes on me? I'm invisible.
How?
Bang. Shot.
Sorry.
Like, son of a bitch, so you're invisible-ish.
Ish.
But not actually invisible.
They might see your face, but they don't see your legs.
Well,
which might just creep them out.
Exactly. It's like, they can't see you, but they can see your shoelaces. Like, it's some stupid shit like that. So I'm like, son of a bitch. But what's really interesting is the use of tactical devices to help scope out areas. So you can launch a UAV drone now up into the air. And what it allows you to do is to note where the bad guys are in the field.
Yes, I think I saw you doing that, actually.
And everybody shows up that's a bad guy with a yellow indicator. And what you can then do using the UAV is actually assign targets for your team members to take out.
Can you completely wipe out all that through the UAV drone? Or do you have to strategically kill certain people, and then you have to go in through the regular gameplay and
the
wipe them out?
The second thing that you said is what you have to do, because what will happen is you will have an area that maybe has three guys in it, and there's another guy off to the side in another area that his view
allows him to see
those three people. So that means that all four have to be taken out. So you have to line up and mark all four targets, meaning that you're responsible as a member of this ghost team for taking out
one of these guys.
And the story is that there was a previous ghost team that was working on something in Africa. Bad thing happens, and now this ghost team is going in to
find out what happened to them.
Exactly. Find out who's behind what happened to them and to make it right.
Okay. Avenge them.
What's cool is that the ghost leader of this team, black dude.
Get out.
Nope.
How do you know? Do you see him?
Yep.
Is he really black?
Oh, he's
black. Is his daddy black?
His daddy's black. Like, at one point, when you finish a mission, you actually are being flown to an aircraft carrier, and he's got iPod buds in, and he's singing to I Shot the Sheriff. And so you see the camera to his face, and he's like, oh, yeah, but I did not shoot the deputy.
Get out.
No, like, he's mad
get
black.
Get out right
he's mad
now.
Black. He's mad black. Ghost leader.
Mad oh man,
black.
His daddy and his mommy black.
Serious. Like, for real.
Is it
not for play?
What's his name?
Ghost leader.
Wait. We have a black protagonist with no name.
Oh, I'm sure he has a name, but everybody uses, you know, their call signs in Ghost Recon games, as you know. So you got 30K, you got Pepper, you got...
So they couldn't give our...
Hunter is what his thing is, but when you are actually on the field and you see everyone's call sign, it says ghost leader above it because he's the leader of the team. But when he talks with headquarters, they always call him Ghost Hunter. So okay. I'm guessing that his call sign is Hunter.
Okay.
And that very well could be his name.
Right. All
but
right.
As you know, with most of these games, you know, everybody has a call sign that they use.
Like, yeah.
And, you know, really they're Soap McTavish, his first name isn't Soap.
It could be.
It wasn't.
It
was like,
come on, how cool would that be?
It would have been cool, but no Irish mother would name her son Soap.
No, she could have named him Lucky or Charms.
No, I want Lucky Charms. But the mechanics work really well, and that's one of the things that I was a little concerned
outside
about in the game.
Kind of invisible-ish.
Yeah, the invisible-ish thing, that just takes getting used to.
See, when you bring up the whole idea of, like, invisible camo, then I start thinking about the camo that you were supposed to get in Metal Gear.
It's like that.
It's like, I'm supposed to be invisible, but this bitch totally, like, pile-dried me through a floor.
Exactly. It's kind of like that. So you have the glossy thing. If you move too fast, you pop out of it.
So you have to go slow.
Right, which makes sense. You know, it's a technology that's being tested.
You're a prototype.
So it's not perfect.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, that's how they explain it, which, you know, if it was completely invisible, well, then nobody would ever spot you, and so you could just wipe the floor with everybody. So you have to have some reason why it doesn't work. So it only works when you're in crouch walk or when you're prone. You have to be in cover to mark your targets effectively without being noticed. You get a very clear indicator, which is very cool, of not only that you're being viewed or watched, but what direction it's coming from. So, you know, if you've got to quickly bounce and
so it's like someone's looking at you from the right.
Yeah, you've got that. And your team is very good at, I have to say, the AI, letting you know where you need to be targeting. Because you're driving this mission, even though you're not ghost leader of the game, you really are driving the mission. So what will happen is you will walk into an area and you'll hear one of the guys go, I have eyes on a sniper on the balcony to the right. He's at a 3 o'clock. So that you can know exactly where you need to look, fly a drone up to be like, okay, not only do I have that guy, but then you'll hear somebody go, wait, I got eyes on another hostile in that same area. And you go, oh shit, there's another guy who probably can see. And so the AI is very good of letting you
know. They're actually helpful.
They are. They're actually helpful. Which is, frankly, the first time that this has happened for me in a Ghost Recon game. You know, typically it's been, okay, you've been the driver and you've got to figure out where you need to put your guys. This actually feels like a real cooperative team when you're not playing co-op, which you can do. You have campaign mode that is both single player and co-op. You have multiplayer. Then you also have a guerrilla mode, which is multiplayer, where you can just go apeshit. Nuts and just
oh
like,
god, that's woo! Right up your alley.
Yeah. But I do like the fact that, you know, in the campaign mode, the AI is actually useful. If I fall, I don't have to sit there and button mash to try and get somebody to come over and help me. If somebody else falls, I don't have to be the person that goes over and heals them. You can issue heal orders, and typically the person who is closest to them will go over and make the heal.
Oh my god, that will make things so much easier.
And so you can actually complete... It feels like a more rounded out experience. And I really like that. And so I've been enjoying my playthrough. And because of the gunsmith mode, where literally my gun explodes, and I can piece by piece change out and swap pieces, I can make a gun that works for me. Like, I I put a pistol handle grip on...
No, you didn't.
On a sniper rifle.
No.
Yeah, I did. I put a pistol grip on a sniper rifle, which fucked up the control but made it highly maneuverable, and then I put a tac scope on it. And I put a long barrel and a silencer on it. I was just headshotting fools.
Are you making guns out of Devil May Cry now? Like, is that what you're doing?
Like, a little bit.
Like, that is ridiculous.
It's kind of awesome, though.
It's ridiculously stupid.
No, it was actually ridiculously awesome because I was headshotting fools from a prone position, like, up, chip, up, chip, up,
your gun is too heavy for a pistol grip, in reality.
But I'm not in reality, because I wouldn't be in the army. I wouldn't be part of a ghost team, in reality. I wouldn't pass the physical.
Neither would I.
Let alone actually be able to hold a gun, because of the...
Oh, I can hold a gun.
Because of the surgery on my wrist.
I've done it.
I would have to have a brace. And then I would have to then brace the brace, which right there would exclude me from service.
Right.
Yeah. We're not talking about reality. We're talking about non-reality.
It's a pistol grip, ninja.
I'm telling you, if you saw my gun and you used it, you'd be like, this gun is a shit.
I would never use that.
Yes, you would. Yes, you would. I'm telling you right now, I'll make this bet with you.
I still have your other bet that I have to do.
I know, we still have to do that. But this week, you come down and play a mission with that gun.
I don't like the idea.
You're gonna like that gun.
I don't like
You're gonna like
idea.
That gun.
I have a bad taste in my mouth.
I'm telling you right now, especially if you put a 12x magnifier scope on that thing.
You're cheating.
I'm not cheating. I'm making my weapon. This is my weapon. There are many weapons out there, but this one is mine.
Alright, fine, so be it. It's your weapon. You love it.
Okay. I do.
Okay.
It's fucking amazing.
Alright.
It's like a Desert Eagle, but awesomer.
Yes, because awesomer is a word.
Yeah, I just made it a word. Shut the fuck up. awesome sauce is a word. So if awesome sauce can be
awesome
a word,
and sauce are two different.
Awesomer is absolutely a
have
word.
Have you been taking lessons from Stephanie Meyer?
No, I've been taking lessons from South Park. Eat a dick. That's right. Shake your head. Anyway, I'm saying right now, if you enjoy strategic games, if you enjoy strategic warplay games...
with massive cheats.
Fuck you with the massive cheats. It's not a cheat. It's a game mechanic they built in. Okay? Yeah. It's not like I enter a cheat code to get into Gunsmith.
You're right.
It's a fucking mechanic of the
You're
game.
You're right. Okay.
So stop calling me a cheat,
Just
damn it.
Saying.
If you enjoy that kind of game... then trust me, you need to pick up Ghost Recon Future Soldier. I'm having a great time. And the story in single player is actually good.
Is that new for Ghost Recon?
No, but it's new for me for, you know, first person and third person shooters. You know, because that really hasn't been, like, a focus. And the Tom Clancy games have been known to have good stories because
right.
books have good stories.
Well, I mean, Tom Clancy.
Yeah. But it's just reaffirming to me to be this many games in, because we're talking like full chain, what, 16, 17 games, and it not have lost any of the storytelling ability. That's impressive to me. So yeah. I'm really enjoying it. Ghost Recon, Future Soldier, check it out. I can't even give it a number. I haven't finished it yet, but...
that's right.
I'm gonna finish it.
You cannot pass judgment until you do that.
That should tell you right there it's worthwhile. So to keep up with all the other stuff that we're writing, which you want to do, you want to check us out over at EGMNow.com.
Yes, because we're now over at EGMNow.com.
EGMNow.com/Electric Sisterhood. That's where all of our news and previews...
subscribe to the page!
Yeah, we definitely want to get some more subscriptions going, because that's coolness.
And that keeps us there.
It does, which we want to have that happen. So you can find our podcast by visiting either the iTunes Music Store or the Microsoft Marketplace by searching for our podcast, Electric Sisterhood, all one word, in both music stores, and hitting the subscribe button, which will make sure that the moment we put out new episodes upon the interwebs, that you can procure them for your listening enjoyment. But if you don't want to do that...
then you can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine. But while you're looking for us, you should look for the other shows that fly underneath our banner.
That's right, because we're not the only thing that makes up the land of Esh. No, 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 no. While our shows go out, Poppin' Fresh on Monday, you can follow that up with the Testosterone to Our Estrogen, the Boston Bass Brigade podcast, which goes out on Tuesday. Follow that up with some Nerd Need Lovin', Gadgets and Gizmos Aplenty. Yeah, but hold it. Geek Aggro, held by our homeboy Deuces Wild. And for the rest of the week, serving your nerd needs, there's all the stuff that we write about on our respective website. A chunk of it you'll find at egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. But for everything else conveniently located in one place, then you want to go to landofesh.com. There's all the stuff that we write about on Twitter. You can ask us questions and engage with us and just see what's kind of on our mind.
Be a part of our world!
Stop it! at facebook.com/landofesh. You can ask us questions, like I said, and we share funny stuff and links to articles and crap that we just find interesting on the interweb.
Oh, I do that all the time.
Same thing
like
on
all
our,
of the times.
Our Twitter account, as well as news. So you want to go to twitter.com/ESH news to get all the news needs. You know, as soon as we put new articles out, they'll be there. Find them, click them, read them, love them, get it done. And then...
live life with the sisters.
Yeah. And then there's the 30% discount that you can get for our t-shirt purchases at Espada Limited. The contest will be starting shortly to win one for free, so make sure that you pay attention to our Facebook.
Clothes for free that I didn't pull out of a garbage can?
Yes.
Woohoo!
There will also be another giveaway that we're going to do. We're going to give away a year of PlayStation Plus to one.
A year?
Yes.
364 and one fourth of a day of free
PlayStation Plus.
Yeah.
To one lucky fan. That's going to be live soon, too. So you want to make sure that you're really, you know, checking out.
Details come later.
Yep, because it's going to be on Facebook. So you
Facebook.
On our Facebook.
You should like our page on Facebook. I'm there all the time by myself.
No, I'm there.
Sometimes.
Deuce is there. Deuce is
there. Yeah, but we need new blood there.
Well, you know, make it happen.
I've been trying. They don't want to see me dance.
I said if we made it to 300, I'd really see you and me dancing.
And no one wants to see me wiggle my dirty bits.
Do.
Look at
Wait,
that.
Wait, did you promise that you would wiggle your dirty bits, or did you just promise you'd wiggle your bits?
I said I'd wiggle my bits.
See? She didn't
say that. They want to see me wiggle my dirty bits.
They might want to see you wiggle your dirty bits.
Do you want to see me wiggle my dirty bits? Then like the Land of Esh page.
Magic.com/TheLandOfEsh.
Magic 300 gets the viewing of my dirty bits.
Alright, I'm gonna leave that alone.
Yeah.
Shit you digging this week, Panda?
Bacon.
Bacon's a good one. Bacon's a good one. You know, I got no problems with digging bacon.
I like wrapping my bacon in bacon, so I bacon when I bacon.
Yeah, well, dog, I heard you like bacon, so...
I do like
bacon. Put some bacon on your bacon, so that way you can be bacon while you're bacon.
Hell yeah, I love bacon.
Who doesn't love bacon?
That guy doesn't like bacon.
Fuck that guy. I mean, not like, fuck that guy.
Oh, but... Yeah. Right, what are you digging this week?
I am actually digging Astro. I know I said it last week, but I actually started playing with my A-stars this week and used them, and I fucking love them. That is, like, the shit.
I like the way that they look in my ear. I've taken so many pictures of me with them in, like, yeah, this is what I look like from the left, and this is how I look like on the right.
The quality is really great, so, once again, I'm...
I know, Eshmam wants them, and I'm like, no, these can't are have mine.
You can't have these. But I'm really digging those, and then the other shit that I'm digging this week, frankly, is just life. It's been a good week. You know, E3 was fantastic. There were lots of great things that we saw, and you know, the gaming future looks really bright, so that's what I'm digging.
It's bright and shiny.
Yeah, it is. Kind of like that thing on your forehead. So as always, I am Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we are out of here.
Can't believe you brought that up.
You brought it up first.